Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
What's good, y'all, and welcome to In the Deep, a deep league-focused fantasy baseball podcast, part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is Jordan White, and I'm joined here once again by my good friend and co-host, Christopher Schwebze Weber. Schwebze, how you doing this week, buddy?
Hi, friends. I'm good. And you know what, Jordan? Frankly, I'm kind of sick of this. I'm sick of the onus always being on me to do things and be active and have things going on in my life so that I can provide 30 seconds of content at the start of every episode. What if I haven't done 30 seconds of content worth of stuff this week, Jordan?
I mean, I suppose we'll just skip right to the deep dives. Schwebze, you don't have to do the work if you don't want to.
Do you understand how inactive and antisocial I would be if I didn't have to provide those 30 seconds of content every week?
Please, Schwebze, enlighten me as to what you did this week.
I would be recording this from bed under a blanket because I would have never left that cozy spot when I woke up this morning. I work from home now. I could do it. I could just stay in bed the whole time, the whole week, the whole month. The
blanket fort sounds very nice, though. I'm not going to lie. When was the last time you built a blanket fort? That's a real question.
Every night.
Do you actually?
I don't feel safe under a standard blanket arrangement. It needs to be in a fort configuration. Must be in fort. Monsters will get me.
No toes poking out. Anything like that. They're going to get you.
Nothing. Tuck the arms in.
Tuck them in. All right. So let's start with young Mr. Schweberton here and go into our first deep dive. Schwebze, please enlighten me and tell me a bit more about someone that you actually covered earlier this year in our preseason episodes, I believe, Mr. Brian Bale.
Schweberton is like the way less sexy, way more nerdy Bridgerton.
Yes. No one gets laid. I mean, no one gets laid in Bridgerton either, do they? Is it all just implied?
I don't know, but I do know that in Schweberton there are no attractive people.
That's not true.
Except my wife.
Yeah, I was saying Christine's there.
All right. Brian Baio. I'm cheating here. This is what happens when we record at like 2 a.m. It goes off the rails real quick.
It's fine.
But anyways, I'm cheating here slightly, which we would never cheat here on In the Deep. We would never break our own arbitrary rules. But I'm doing a deep dive on a player who I've already technically kind of done a deep dive on before, although I was limited to 2 minutes when I did that. That player is Brian Baio. Our regular listeners might remember me talking about Baio way back in March in our off-season starting pitcher preview episode with super special guest star and friend of the podcast, Mikey Ahedo. And for those of you who aren't loyal, first of all, we know who you are. And second of all, in that episode, what what Jordan and I did was we took ADP ranges, so for example, like 300 to 350, and we would each choose one pitcher in that ADP range, and then we sort of competed for Ahedo's attention to try to convince our guest that our player was the better bet this year and was in for a bigger year. This was actually probably the most fun pair of players that we talked about in retrospect, because I went with Brian Baio, and Jordan chose one of his favorite offseason targets, Braxton Garrett. We're actually going to be getting a little bit of deja vu here this episode, because I'm doing my deep dive on Baio and Jordan's going to talk about Braxton Garrett a little bit later on, spoiler alert, because both of those guys are sub 20% right now, and neither of them should be, probably. So Bayo had a late start to his season this year as he opened the year on the IL, but he's been kind of flying under the radar since making his debut 6 weeks ago, but likely because his initial couple of starts were kind of duds, and I think that's going a long way towards depressing his value right now. It's actually, funnily enough, that is similar to how his debut went last year. Bayo's whole thing last year was that he had three bad starts in his initial exposure to the majors, and after that put up a 3.18 ERA with a 3.52 xFIP, and he had the peripherals to support that sparkling run prevention. The negatives were that he walked too many players, his home run prevention was screaming regression in a bad way, and his hits allowed were screaming regression in a good way. So where do we stand now this year? Starting with that run prevention we talked about for Bayo, after his initial couple of rough starts coming off the IL, this year we're looking at five starts of a 2.57 ERA and a 3.54 xFIP. Now, if you remember, that xFIP is basically identical to his really strong run from last year. During this stretch, he got one layup matchup in Cleveland, but he also had to face Toronto, the Angels, Atlanta, and Seattle, who represent the 2nd, 13th, 16th, and 18th best offenses in baseball against righties. It's not the most brutal of schedules outside of Toronto, but honestly, taming the Blue Jays' offense is impressive, and at this point in time, he hasn't given up more than three earned runs since his first start of the season way back on April 17th, and he's on a five-start streak of not giving up more than two earned runs and striking out at least five batters. I would take that from just about any one of my pitchers in this current pitching environment, let alone someone rostered in under 20% of leagues. I mentioned that last year Bayo walked too many batters. Well, in this year's hot streak, he is walking 7.6% of the batters he faces, which compared to last year's hot streak, he put up a walk rate of 9.3%. So he's walking significantly fewer batters right now, even while his strikeout rate has gone up. With his strikeouts going up and his walks going down, his K-minus walk rate, his K percentage minus walk percentage, has been 16.9%, which is 4% higher than last year's figure, which again is a significant change. Like a 17% K-minus walk rate is a good but not elite number, but that's definitely a number that we'll take from a pitcher. I mentioned that Bayo had a couple of results last year that were screaming for regression to hit. He had that sky-high BABIP, and he had that crazy low home run rate. So, checking in on those, they have both pretty much done what I expected. The BABIP is sitting at a still high, but a more normal 323. But his home run to fly ball rate has way, way, way overcorrected, and it's currently at 25%, which is just plain silly and likely to drop. I was looking at all the home runs he gave up so far this year, and it's been a combination of a few terrible pitches right down the middle, like you would expect, and then he also threw a few decently located fastballs that just, you know, got hit by good hitters like Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Ronald Acuna Jr. Just better hitting than pitching, you know, sometimes that happens. I don't really see anything too alarming here, especially given his stuff and repertoire. I expect his home run rate to drop to reasonable levels, even if it never actually gets, like, actually what we would consider low. The reason I say this is because Bayo is fantastic at getting ground balls, like borderline elite. At the moment, among starting pitchers with at least 30 innings, the only pitchers who are getting a higher rate of ground balls than Brian Bayo are Alex Cobb, Logan Webb, Framber Valdez, and Marcus Stroman. Now, even among that group of elite ground ballers, Bayo is an outlier because A, he has a really high home run rate, which is not common for ground ballers, and he also has a 12% swinging strike rate, which is even more uncommon for ground ballers. Only Framber Valdez even comes close in that group at 11%. that leaves us with a pretty unique pitcher. And if there's one thing I love, it's a unique player, because it just makes analysis fun. But on top of being unique, you can also squint and see a really good pitcher here, given some of the characteristics that Bayo has. All four of his pitchers have at least something interesting or positive going for them, and between the sinker, changeup, and fastball, he's getting loads of ground balls, loads of swings and misses. The missing piece here for him is probably figuring out an effective breaking ball. His slider is the most underwhelming pitch in his repertoire, and shelving it for something else probably would behoove him, or even like reworking it or just reducing the usage, something. But even without figuring out a real good quality breaker, I still think there's a good pitcher in here who will likely have a couple of blowups here and there, because if his four-seamer command falters, it will probably get hit a long way. But he should be good more often than bad, and in general brings a fun and unique skill set to the table. It's kind of a shame that he pitches for the Red Sox. The Red Sox have the sixth worst infield outs above average in baseball. So they are the sixth worst infield fielding team in baseball per that measure. So it's a shame he doesn't pitch for like the Cardinals or something to take advantage of their devil magic and strong defense. Bayo gets two starts this week, but it's a bit of a scary, uneven week because he gets one cupcake matchup in the Reds at home, followed by a really rough Tampa Bay matchup later in the week. In a weekly league, I probably wouldn't run him out there unless I was desperate for a two-start week, because Tampa is just that scary, and with Bayo's early home run issues and Tampa Bay's propensity for hitting home runs, that feels like a blow-up waiting to happen. I would absolutely be looking to add Bayo in just about any deep league, not just as a temporary add, but as a long-term add. I think he could be the kind of player that you add and hold on to all year long, as I think he can be, like, comfortably a top 60 starter in baseball this year.
Yeah, I really dig that. I think this is, we talked about this before we recorded the episode, that the kind of like the split between Braxton Garrett and Brian Bayo was probably the most interesting and fun thing that we covered in that episode with Mikey. I think right now where I stand, because there's obviously some stuff that I'll talk about with Braxton Garrett later. This won't be a deep dive. This will just be like very quickly touching on him. But right now, I do still think that Bayo likely has a higher ceiling, because if he does find a breaker, like, he could be very, 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 very good. Obviously, like, all he has is the slider right now. The slider giving up a 440 batting average so far this year, it's not good.
Not ideal
at all. A bit concerning that his hard hit rate has also jumped up a decent amount. I believe it went up from like 37.5% last year, and it's now up at 48.1. League average is sitting right around 36. So he's 12% above league average for hard hit rate. That said, like Schwabzi said, though, a lot of ground balls. So a lot of that hard contact, while it does exist and it's not necessarily ideal, it is coming on the ground as opposed to being lifted in the air. So the damage is being limited in that sense. So a little bit of give and take there. But I do like Bayo still. And I think, like Schwabzi said, finding a breaker would be super huge for him. I don't know if it's going to be the slider, if he's going to be able to like tinker with something in the offseason, or if they're going to be still be just workshopping things throughout this season for him to work on. But he's really just a couple changes away from being a really, really, really interesting option. So I do like this one a lot.
Yeah, and I'll never forgive Mikey still for choosing your team of four pitchers over my team of four pitchers from that starting pitcher preview.
Oh, God, I pandered so hard. I pandered harder than anyone has ever pandered in their life.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes you got to be above it and suffer for it.
I just want Mikey to think that I'm the prettiest girl in school. You know what I mean?
Yeah, who doesn't?
Yeah. Anyways, all right. We'll be back with my deep dive right after this break.
Eating is an emotional experience, which is why managing your weight needs to be a psychological one. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Start taking control of your weight management and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today. Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes, but the problem is managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight today and in the future. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Start taking control of your weight management and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, and we are back. So, after
Jordan, I love that every week you still say my first deep dive, even though we've only been doing one for 2 months.
I know. I can't. It's just like muscle memory and force of habit at this point. I don't know why I can't get past that. Eventually I will. Maybe next year, you know? Maybe now I'll just do it every single week as a recurring bit. That's what it is.
There's always next year.
There's always next year. But yes, for my one and only deep dive, I decided to rock with someone that I brought up last week as an option. Someone that I put in as a backup bid to my deep dive from last week. Whose name I'm not even going to bother mentioning because he has been relegated to the minors. He's been sent down.
It's going to put up some fantastic numbers down there, though.
Unfortunately, those don't accrue in any leagues. Luckily, I did not get him in TGFBI. I was fortunate enough to actually have missed out on the person that I did a deep dive on last week. But my backup bid was Owen Miller of the Brewers. So I'm being a big homer here and talking about him. As it turns out, it was an awesome win for me getting Owen Miller instead of the other person that I talked about last week, because he's already got two homers and a stolen base this week, and that's with three games still remaining in the home series this weekend versus the Giants. As of this recording, of course, we're recording on Thursday night, releasing on Saturday. So with Owen Miller, he's having a really, really hot stretch to start the month of May and has upped his average a bunch. We need to ask, is it sustainable? I want to start with the batting average part of this. So he's got a 400 batting average since the start of May, which has brought his season line all the way up to 346. I don't think that this is sustainable. Like, he's not going to be hitting 346 the entire season. His BABIP is in like the 91st percentile in the entire league right now. It's at like 370 something, just exceptionally high. That said, I think there are clear changes in his swing decisions at the plate that have led to these positive results with his batting average. So he is making a career high amount of contact. He's in the 91st percentile in the league with an 83.2% contact rate. And then he's striking out at a career low rate at just 14.7%. That's 89th percentile in the league. And his career best 20.2% two strike O swing rate. So swinging strike rate on pitches outside the zone. Or sorry, chase rate essentially on two strike counts, and 8.3% swinging strike rate overall are both career lows, and a huge part of why he is striking out at a career low as well. Again, is he a 340 hitter? Probably not. I think he's due for some regression. The BABIP is going to drop a bit. That said, I think the expected batting average for him so far this year is sitting just around 300, just over, I believe, at like 304. He's improved a bunch, and I want to particularly highlight something that I found while looking at this before we started recording with Schwebsy. And it took me a bit to actually find this and find the angle with which I wanted to approach this, but he's just gotten a lot better at hitting fastballs. He was not a good fastball hitter previously. Last year with the Guardians, he played in 130 games. He only managed a 246 average against all fastballs. So that's sinkers, four-seamers, cutters. This year, he's hitting 350. And while there is a large discrepancy between his expected batting average and actual batting average, his expected batting average has gone up 33 points compared to last year from 256 to 289 on those offerings. So again, on sinkers, four-seamers, and cutters. His consistency in putting balls into play, particularly as of late, has been a massive boon for his batting average as well. I do think the thing that I really want to highlight here, though, is the fact that basically he was very, very bad at hitting fastballs. I think the game plan for a lot of pitchers going into this year was we're going to feed him a lot of fastballs because he's not good at hitting them. And in today's game, a lot of pitchers are elevating fastballs. So high fastballs, specifically this year, this was the thing that Schwebsy and I found when we were looking at Owen Miller before the episode. He is hitting high fastballs super duper well, like both for a high average, and it's also where he's posting his highest exit velocities on balls hit. I think that was probably a approach change for Owen Miller and probably a focus for him in the offseason, knowing how poorly he was hitting fastballs. Keying in on hitting those high fastballs, I think, has been the thing that has driven this high batting average spike. So since he started the season as a bench bat with the Brewers, on like May 10th, he became a regular starter for them. Since that point, he's been a fixture in the lineup. He's only missed one game. He's been batting leadoff against every single left-handed pitcher the Brewers have faced in that stretch. And this upcoming week, the Brewers should see at least another two left-handed pitchers in Yusei Kikuchi for the Toronto Blue Jays and Brandon Williamson for the Cincinnati Reds. His lineup spot versus right-handed pitchers is going to be a bit more sporadic. He's hit in every spot between 4th and 8th since May 10th against right-handed pitchers. But regardless, he should still see regular playing time every single day. The other thing that I really wanted to key in on, and again, this is something that I love to highlight with players, especially guys who are on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues, is that he already has first, second, and third base eligibility in pretty much every single league. But in NFBC leagues like TGFBI, he's just four outfield appearances away from gaining eligibility there. So you have a high average, super util bat with some stolen base upside here. Because also, something else that I wanted to cover too here is that in 113 plate appearances so far this season, Owen Miller already has five stolen bases, which is more than twice as much as he's had in the previous two seasons in Cleveland. So he's being more aggressive on the base paths here too, and taking advantage of this, getting on base more often with the high batting average. So as far as a guy who's going to be eligible at potentially four positions coming up, he was literally rostered in 0% of TGFBI leagues as of last week. He's up to like 40, 42%-ish now, something like that. He only becomes more valuable the closer he inches to gaining that outfield eligibility. I think the one wrinkle that I do want to throw in here when it comes to Owen Miller is that Luis Arias is about to start his rehab assignment and is going to be returning soonish. How is that going to impact Owen Miller's playing time? They play a lot of the same positions, like second base, third base. Is Bryce Terang going to sit on the bench a lot more often to clear more room for Owen Miller to actually play? Is Christian Yelich going to get bumped into the DH spot while Miller grabs more reps in left field? I don't know what's going to happen when Arias gets back from the IL, but I don't think that the answer is let's sit the only dude who's been able to reliably hit against left-handed pitching in Owen Miller. I think he's going to continue to play, and that's why I'm buying in on Owen Miller moving forward.
Yeah, I think you've, in general, had a pretty good sense of the Brewers' roster moves this year. Like, you've correctly called out both Garrett Mitchell and Joey Weimer getting a lot more plate appearances than I expected. So I think you got a pretty good sense of how that's going to shake out. But I mean, I kind of feel like Joey Weimer, Jesse Winker has to be the odd man out. He's just been so rough.
Well, that would be the thing. Winker's been struggling. If you put Owen Miller in left field and have Yelich DH, like I don't think that happens every day, right? Like, I think that there's going to be days where Owen Miller ends up playing second base. Terang sits because Terang's just been okay as well. Like, he's been nothing special as of late. He's just really valuable defensively. I think that's something that you want to keep Bryce Terang at second base because he is so good defensively. Same thing with Joey Weimer being in center field, right? Like, he has his bat has been pretty anemic as of late.
Right now Winker is a strong side DH only player who has a 74 WRC plus. That is what we call a DFA candidate in the functioning baseball team world.
Yeah. So I do think that Yelich ends up probably DHing a bit more because they end up wanting to get Owen Miller in. And that's why I think probably, I would say like a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks from now, you're going to see Owen Miller with that outfield eligibility in like NFBC leagues. He's already got it in a ton of different leagues. Like, there's some places where it's only 5 games or like even 3 for some leagues, I believe. He's got 6 appearances so far this season.
Yeah. Can confirm. I added him at your with from your advice. I added him in my NL only league, and I have enjoyed his very hot week.
Yeah, he's had a very good week. It was very nice to. I mean, you don't usually see or expect that quick of a turnaround in terms of like positive results for a player. But like, he literally
happens.
He had 2 home runs within the first like 2 or 3 days of this week, and then had a stolen base in there as well. 3-for-4 game. Like, he's been very, very, very good and very enjoyable to have on teams. And for someone like me, who's, again, I reiterate this every single week, I am so bad at drafting batting average. I am the absolute worst at it. I try to go for like power and RBI upside typically. He has been such a welcome change.
Dude, folks at home, after Jordan and I record this podcast, the day after, if like the guys that we did deep dives on or that we talked about at any length, if they have good days, just our group chat is just like those players' names in all caps because we're so excited to have been right.
It's just like, it's literally just like, I'm trying to think of a very specific example of someone that we've literally just.
For me, it was Kutch.
There was Kutch one time. I think you also just sent me like, it wasn't even in all caps. It was just, I'm just gonna scroll back. I'm gonna find something. Let's see here. Braxton, Alex Faedo, Patrick Corbin, all just with exclamation points afterwards. It's just messages with just last names with exclamation points afterwards that are all just thrown into our Discord chat.
We're taking our victory laps into each other's DMs because we don't want to do it publicly.
Because, I mean, we should just do it publicly.
Probably.
I mean, we're doing it right now publicly. At least I hope so. I hope people are listening to this.
Imagine promoting ourselves or actually trying to like improve our reach. I would never.
You couldn't pay me to do that. all right. We're gonna go back into our league-wide roundup for other deep league targets right after this second ad break.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat, and that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, we are back. So, Schwebzy, let's hop into this league-wide roundup now. Starting in the NL East, we got Atlanta, and Jared Schuster is the one person here that I wanted to cover. He had a really middling start the night that we recorded this against the Phillies. A Phillies offense that is trending upward. He threw five innings, gave up seven hits, one walk, and four earned runs. He did give up nine hard-hit balls, which is not the best. That said, I think maybe that tamping down the expectations for him and maybe the market for him, he does have a nice streaming opportunity next week against the A's. This is one start next week, so he is someone that I'm keeping an eye on for a potential ad in TGFBI as he is available in my league. And then also elsewhere, if I want to stream someone, I think that Schuster isn't a terrible option. Against a very, very, very poor Oakland A's offense. So that's kind of where I'm at with Jared Schuster of Atlanta.
I was so mad when Schuster came up and had his really good start last week, because it was like he got sent down after his initial disappointing run, and the Braves were like, hey, did you forget that you're a mediocre Braves prospect? You're supposed to be better than this. And then he came up and shoved.
He just came up and turned into, what is this?
Bryce Elder.
Bryce Elder. There we go. I almost said Bryce Wilson, but he is now in the Brewers.
Same thing, really.
Basically, yes. Yes, that's all I have for Atlanta. I also, for Miami, as we alluded to earlier in the episode, wrote a little bit about Braxton Garrett. So he had another solid start stat line-wise against the Rockies today. This is Thursday that we're recording this. He gave up two runs in five innings, but the fun addition for Garrett is that he has added a cutter to his pitch mix, and it bodes well for him as another offering that can be more consistently thrown for a strike aside from his sinker, which has been hit around a lot more than last year. While the cutter has been doing a good job at getting swinging strikes, it has also been hit decently hard, so it's a little bit of good and a little bit of bad here. And that's a contributing factor to Garrett's increased barrel rate allowed, as well as the considerable uptick in his ex-Wobicon, which has gone from 374 to 443. His hard hit rate is also a whopping 48.5, similar to like Brian Baio, who we talked about earlier, which I thought was a pretty good parallel because they might have almost the exact same hard hit rate so far this year. 48.1. for Baio, and then 48.5 for Garrett. So you do win this one, Schwebzy. And that puts him in, I believe, the bottom 7% of the league, and it's nearly 10 full points higher than what he had last season. It was like 38.8, something like that. All this to say, while the results have been okay as of late, I think the underlying data remains a bit worrying for Garrett, and I would like to see him give up less hard contact. I would steer clear of him for now, unless you find him facing a team that's pretty weak against left-handed pitching, namely teams like, I don't know, the Milwaukee Brewers, who strike out at an absurd rate against left-handed pitching. That might be a good stream for you. But I do still like Braxton Garrett, but I do need to see some improvements before I fully buy back in.
I think you need to take a lot of Garrett's stats with a big grain of salt right now.
Oh yeah.
Because we can't forget that at the beginning of the month he had his just absolute decimation at the hand of the Atlanta Braves, where he gave up 16 base runners and 11 runs in 4.1 innings. One start will brutalize and ruin all of his rate stats for, I don't know, another month at least.
Yeah.
None of his rate stats are going to look good until, you know, we get some more distance from that start. And that includes like his hard hit rate. Like, so I you know, if you're paying attention, you're not starting him against the Braves. So you avoided that, even if he did have a decent appearance against them before that. So I'm not really worried about Garrett. I do think he's going to be good from here on out.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to your beloved New York Mets, Schwebzy.
Oh yeah. Fun fact about the New York Mets: the universe hates them. So from a team-wide perspective, they are fifth worst in baseball when it comes to expected results versus actual results. So their team-wide ex-WOBA is 15 points higher than their actual WOBA. They tend to not get as good a results as you would expect from the types of balls they hit. The reason I bring this up is because Brett Beatty is one of the hitters who is suffering the most from this team-wide black hole of luck. Brett Beatty has a 367 ex-WOBA, which would be good for 40th among qualified hitters, but his actual WOBA is 319, which places him 140th among hitters. Beatty is smoking the ball, and he is pulling the ball, which is important, and he's pulling the ball in the air, which is doubly important. He frankly just looks really good at the plate at the moment. I would hold him if you have him, and add him if you can, because I really do think a breakout is coming. And again, I'm trying really hard not to be a homer. I had said that Francisco Alvarez is must own in pretty much every league, and so far that looks like an okay prediction. So I feel pretty confident that Beatty will make me look good here as well. And then on the pitching side of things, Brooks Raley is back, and he is a saves hold arm that you probably want. He's looked really good since coming off the IL, and he's already picked up a couple of holds. Trust me when I tell you that the Mets are desperate for a consistent bullpen arm, especially a lefty. So if Raley can stop giving up hits to lefties, which was weird, he should be able to lock down the seventh inning, or just high leverage versus lefty situations. Fun fact, Raley has only pitched, I think it's like 12 innings this year, maybe less, and he's already given up as many home runs versus lefties than he had given up in the previous 2 years combined. Stupid sexy Rays.
The Rays remain fantastic.
Yeah, so like mad at these, them all the time.
I like both of these call-outs, obviously, with Beatty. Schwabzy, you still interested in Beatty in our Dynasty League that we're in?
I'm not taking this bait. I know you won't trade him to me, because you're mean.
That's true, I will. Okay, let's go to the Washington Nationals. We got a few names down here. C.J. Abrams, Jamer Candelario, and Patrick Corbin. Any feelings on any of these guys? I mean, obviously that Corbin had a pretty decent start this past week. Candelario's been hitting for a solid average as of late. C.J. Abrams has shown to be a bit toolsy.
Believe it or not, Abrams has been the 57th rated hitter over the last 2 weeks.
Damn. Okay.
He's been kind of in that range for a little bit now. He's been productive for a solid month now. It's just he's doing it. He's been like good more than great for any one stretch. Like the last 2 weeks, for example, he's hitting 250, which is fine, with 3 home runs, 2 stolen bases, 6 runs and 8 RBI. None of that jumps off the page, but if you do that consistently, you're a great player, a great fantasy player. So, yeah, I do like Abrams, especially in leagues where you have a middle infield spot, and you know, second base and shortstop can get pretty thin pretty quick especially if you didn't focus on that position in the drafts. And especially if you, for example, have Carlos Correa on your team and now are looking at a stretch without him, C.J. Abrams would be a great stopgap. And then Candelario and Corbin, I feel like are similar in that they're just like kind of okay veterans that, I can't believe I'm saying this about Corbin, will not kill you, and you can kind of slot them in as temporary waiver wire ads. And I still think the floor is so low with Corbin that it pains me to say this about him, but he's coming off of 6 straight quality starts. His slider is looking fantastic. I roster him myself in a couple of leagues where I was desperate. So, I mean, I guess, you know, I try to do the whole practice what you preach thing. I wouldn't tell you guys to add Corbin if I wouldn't do it myself. I think he's a cromulent Toby right now. I wouldn't be racing out to add him, but if you're in dire need of a starting pitcher, and he's the best guy out there, don't be afraid to do it. He's been worth it lately.
Yeah, I mean, like, With Corbin specifically, yes, he has had quite a few quality starts. I think he's had now what was today? Did he pitch today?
I don't remember.
So the last time he pitched was Saturday that I can think of, and it is maybe he pitches today on Friday. That might be it.
Well, Hunter Harvey got the loss today. So, today was Jake Urban.
Yeah, I think Corbin is tomorrow. Again, this will be Friday. Friday the 26th that I'm referring to, but he's not provided a ton of strikeouts necessarily in those starts. He's given up at least two runs in every single start so far this year. Like, these are like not the best quality starts, right? It's still going to come with like a little bit of that. He's giving up a ton of hits. I mean, he had one outing where he gave up only three hits in seven innings pitched. But then like you look at some of the other starts, like six walks over six innings, or sorry, six hits over six innings, eight hits over six innings, eight hits over six innings.
You know what this is, Jordan? This is Stockholm Syndrome. I had been beaten into this state by the awful state of pitching this year. Yeah, all the injuries, the environment where there's the home runs have ticked back up. I have been beaten to the point where I'm like, yeah, Corbin's fine, I guess.
I'm begging for just like a pitcher with like a 3.75 ERA because it will absolutely help me in TGFBI.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Corbin, his next start is at Kansas City, which is something that I would run out there.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I dig that. That's a pretty good matchup for him. Any feelings on Candelario? Other than just like, I mean, I think the counting stats aren't really that crazy impressive or like exciting to me. It's mostly just I think that like as an average bat, he's probably pretty good. He's hitting like I think 288 since the start of the month.
That volume is sexy.
Yeah, the volume is always good. We will take the volume, especially in our 15 plus team leagues, or ALNL only leagues. So I do like that. But all right, let's go to the NL Central and talk a bit about the Chicago Cubs. What about Matt Mervis, Cubsy?
Well, the early barrel rate is sky high, but so is the K rate. And I mean, really, this is going to come down to which one drops first and which one drops more, I guess. He's not a priority target for me, but he's worth a shot if I'm looking for a change at first base, and especially if I need power, because, like I said, that barrel rate, woof, real high. If he's out there and available, I wouldn't mind taking him as a power flyer.
I dig that. Yeah, I don't know. For me, like someone who strikes out a whole bunch and like hits a bunch of home runs, potentially somewhat enticing. Obviously, they also have like Christopher Morel, who is now well with outside the range of people that we can talk about, who is just having an absurd start to the season.
He is already falling back to earth like a rock. You can see it in real time.
Yeah, I mean, you figure it's going to happen at some point. It's kind of what happened with him last year too.
Mm-hmm.
The exact same deal. But the other person that I wanted to cover though from the Cubs, Mark Leiter Jr. The ratios for Leiter, I mean, we've covered him previously, look incredibly enticing. He finds himself in a high leverage role now with the Cubs that could potentially turn into more save opportunities. I know that Roster Resource has him listed as a co-closer with Edward Elzele. He's got, I believe, a save and a hold in the past like 4 days. Lots of high leverage innings for him. I think that Leiter, considering how just effective he's been so far this year, definitely could be a really, really exciting and enticing option off the waiver wire to help you get some saves. So.
Yeah, and a name to keep filed away in the back of your mind is Cody Hoyer, who is on a rehab assignment and could factor into the Cubs' late inning situation when he comes back. But yeah, I have added Leiter in a couple of leagues where middle relievers are valuable. I've been a fan. He's just, his splitter has just reached like a never before seen level for him. It's been such a good pitch. And I got to watch it against the Mets the other day. He looks real good right now.
He's been especially impressive. I mean, obviously, I don't know. I think there's value to be had with guys like this. Obviously, before he even has a chance at having save opportunities, like in this current pitching environment, what I was trying to say, having someone that can provide you those like really clean ratios is always very, very valuable. And the fact that he's now going to be kind of in the mix for save opportunities only makes him that much more valuable. All right, let's go to the Cincinnati Reds. Start with Spencer Steer, Schwebze.
I've never been wrong before, but there's a first time for everything. I think Spencer Steer might be a little bit better than I gave him credit for. Because he seems to be just be putting up a similar line that he did in the minors. He seems to have not really missed a beat. He started off pretty a little slower than you would have liked, but he is now showing that he can bounce back from a rough patch. And we cannot forget about the Great American Small Park, which, you know, can be a great equalizer when a player might not be as talented as you would like.
Yeah, it can be a little bit rough initially coming up, but he has been very solid as of late. What do you have any sort of opinions on Ben Lively? Because I had no clue who he was coming up. I know his first two appearances, like, he had pitched multiple innings, only had one strikeout in each of his first two outings. And then over these past two outings, 8 strikeouts each. Just this absurd slider that's gotten a 50%+ CSW in the last two starts. Like, it's really like that's what he has, is that slider.
Yeah, it's what he keeps falling back on when he gets into trouble, and it's frankly getting like incredible results.
Yes.
So I don't know if this did he start today, or was it yesterday?
I don't know if it was yesterday. I can't.
I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So like Wednesday, it would be Wednesday, what we're referring to. But like he played. It was against the Cards. 2 earned runs over 6 innings pitched, and 8 strikeouts. Again, like I said, it's the second game in a row that he's had 8 strikeouts. The slider is gross, and there's like tons of clips of him just destroying hitters, locating it exceptionally well. His fastballs are not good. They're just not. The feel is not that good. So, and
do you know how many hits he's allowed on his slider this year?
I'm gonna say 1.
0.
I was close.
You were close.
That is absurd.
This sounds made up. It's got a 63 whiff percentage. Now, the one thing I would worry about here is like just looking at his pitch mix and like what he throws to what-handed hitters. I would worry down the line about maybe there being a platoon issue. Like a platoon split issue, because he doesn't really throw his slider too much against lefties, and it's by far by leaps and bounds his best pitch. Maybe his changeup can pick up the slack against lefties. He seems to throw his changeup and curveball pretty much exclusively against lefties, and they've done well enough so far, but they are just not the pitch that his slider is. So I wonder if he can have the same kind of success against teams that can actually field a lineup with a few strong lefties.
Absolutely. The other pitcher that we wrote down here, just to kind of like keep in mind, was Brandon Williams at 5% rostered. I'm personally not really interested in Brandon Williamson at all. I don't think there's enough upside for anyone to like really roster him. I'm mostly just waiting for Nick Lodolo to come back healthy so I can talk about a Reds left-handed pitcher that I actually like.
Fair.
Not really necessarily a fan of Brandon Williamson for fantasy. So I'm probably going to pass on that. Going to now my homer section and talking about the Milwaukee Brewers. The only thing that I really wanted to cover is like the Brewers rotation is in complete shambles right now with all of the injuries that have hit that rotation. So you had like Ashby went out before the season started. Brandon Woodruff is on the 60-day IL. Jason Alexander went on the 60-day IL. You have Eric Lauer and Wade Miley that both went on the 15-day IL. Lauer more likely to be back right after that 15 days is up, but Miley, who knows what his recovery is going to be like. He pulled a very uncommon muscle in his back, I believe he had a strain of. So it's really unsure what the timeline will be like for him to actually come back. The starters that they have stepping in now are going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting and take pressure off the bullpen, because even the bullpen is a bit beat up too. So you have Adrian Hauser, Colin Ray, and Julio Teheran, who just literally just signed a deal with the Brewers the day before we recorded this and made a start. Actually looked pretty solid. Hauser's back from the IL and has had a decent start in his last outing. You also had Colin Ray, who just got his first win as a starter in, I think, like 5 years or something crazy like that. Ray is going to have the rotation spot until someone returns off the IL, and then I assume that Hauser and Teheran will be the other two that stay in the rotation. Each of these guys over the next couple weeks is going to get a considerable amount of run. This is less a recommendation to pick up each of these guys than it is to pay attention to upcoming matchups, and if you find a stream that you like, go for it. Otherwise, I think most of these guys can just chill on the waiver wire, but I just want you to at least be aware that these guys are going to get volume because they are going to be getting starts over the next couple of weeks for the Brewers. All right, let's move to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Talk about Johan Oviedo real quick. Again, the breakers are pretty solid. He had another okay start earlier this week against Texas. Gets San Francisco in San Francisco next. I'm probably going to fade this one. San Francisco has looked a bit better offensively as of late. That said, I still do like him as a streamer against bottom-of-the-barrel offenses. The breakers are still very, very good when he actually does locate them. So I like him a decent amount. I'm actually surprised that Oviedo is less rostered than Roansy Contreras, considering the results.
It's close enough that I it doesn't shock me too much, but I'm surprised that they have both wound up being such similar pitchers.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of thought Roansy was going to wind up having an electric fastball, but they both wound up being these kind of like high velocity fastballs that aren't actually good paired with like really dope sliders.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I didn't really think about how similar they were until you said that now. Now it's going to bother me. I feel like the rostership numbers should be identical. So to Contreras, do you think Contreras gets a very, very, very slight bump because he's younger?
Maybe. I mean, Contreras was a much sexier prospect than Oviedo was, true, which probably factors into it.
Still in people's brains. Yeah, I get that. What about going to the bullpen here? What about Colin Holderman, Bubsy?
I mean, you know this. I love when a player's last name describes them as a player. So clearly I love a save hold stud named Holderman. Holderman makes me really mad because as much as I love Daniel Vogelbach, fun fact, my wife's favorite baseball player is Daniel Vogelbach, who she refers to as Danny the Fridge for reasons unbeknownst to anybody but her. I was so annoyed at the Mets trading a solid reliever with 6 years of control for basically half of a DH. And now here we are with Holderman providing a large, sturdy bridge to David Bednar. The man is 6'7". He's a big boy. Big boy, throw ball hard. He does throw like 100 too, but no, he's a really, really solid holds guy. If he's out there and you're in a holds league, he shouldn't be, but if he is, he's worth an ad.
All right, let's go to the last team here in the NL Central, the Cardinals. I just wanted to cover Matthew Liberatore. He's almost assuredly confirmed to be getting a start against Cleveland upcoming here, who have been absolute, just for lack of a better term, booty cheeks against left-handed pitching so far this year. They have a 74 WRC plus as a team. That's second worst in the majors. Much like his debut against the Brewers, another team that's not great against left-handed pitching, I would be elated to stream him here. So if he's available on the wire to stream against Cleveland, I would happily do that and feel pretty comfortable doing it.
All right. I think we can get through the NL West pretty quickly. In Arizona, there is Gabriel Moreno, who I've said many a time on this podcast, I like a lot as a batting average focused catcher, which is not a super common archetype. And if your team needs batting average, he's the rare catcher that can provide it. He's a pretty easy one to cover. Over in Colorado, Nolan Jones is being promoted, which is something that a lot of draft and hold players are probably really excited about. But I'm not really sure where he's going to play. And it's the Rockies, so the Rockies just aren't going to do... The Rockies are like the bizarro Tampa Bay Rays, where like the Rays don't really do the lineup things that you want them to do, but everyone succeeds. And then the Rockies don't really do anything you want them to do with their lineup, and everyone is bad. Nolan Jones is a really intriguing, huge power... Oh God, I said huge. Huge power bat.
I'm glad that you pointed it out, because I was going to make fun of you if you didn't.
Yeah, every now and then my New York sticks out.
Oh, wait, time on. Okay. I have to circle back to something. I know this is going to be so off topic. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Shoot.
Just so you don't get bullied by people online, I need you to not say the second T in Toronto.
Okay.
When you pronounce it, it's not pronounced that way by the locals.
Toronto?
Toronto. Yes.
Toronto. Okay, easy. I don't like pronouncing consonants and words as a New Yorker.
I'm just saving you the headache. And the tweets. Well, maybe the tweets. I know that Justin is going to tweet at you about it.
Fair. But Nolan Jones is a huge power bat who is absolutely destroying AAA and might be worth a stash. He is striking out less than ever. He is walking more than ever. All of that good stuff that you like to see in a prospect before they get brought up. And lastly, for the NL West, Bobby Miller made his debut, and it is probably already too late to add him. He is at 26% rostered, and that is in the casual ESPN and Yahoo leagues, so if you're in a more competitive league, he's probably gone already. I was pretty shocked to see Bobby Miller throw only 30% fastballs, because all of the ink spilled over him is about his triple-digit fastball velo. But his fastball kind of got hit pretty hard in his debut. So I'm wondering, does Bobby Miller have more of a Hunter Green fastball than like a Mason Miller fastball?
Ooh, that's a good comp. I like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a question that I have now. You know, when a guy has a truly good fastball, like your Bryce Millers, your Mason Millers, your Spencer Striders, like it shows up immediately. Like hitters don't just easily hit those pitches. But anyway, I am still intrigued, because it was a pretty mature pitch mix for someone with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. So I would probably still prioritize adding Miller if I could, especially, you know, with the Dodgers pitching development machine being what it is.
Agreed. All right, let's go to the AL, starting in the AL East. I'm going to cover a couple pitchers for the Orioles real quick. Dean Kramer and Kyle Bradish. So I'm personally out on Kramer, although the results of late have been favorable for his starts. He allowed 11 base runners and only gave up one run versus Toronto. And I just feel like most of this has been really fortunate scattering of threats that's led to no real damage for Kramer. I'm fading him. It's basically the same story with Bradish. The slider, which was something that we were hoping that he would throw more often, it was actually the pitch that he threw the most in his last start, and I think it drew like a 16% CSW. It was just not good in his last start. I don't think that either of these guys are worth the risk for your ratios. Really high whips on both. So I'm gonna fade both of them, and that's pretty much the story for that. Schwebzy, talk to me about Tanner Houck.
Well, Tanner Houck has a 4.99 ERA right now. He's better than that. The most interesting, like we all know what he brought to the table in previous years, right? And that is a filthy slider, a sinker that is good enough to show up on Pitching Ninja GIFs every now and then, and then not much else. Well, last year he threw a split finger fastball. He started working it in. He threw it about 6% of the time last year. This year it's up to 12% and has itself been making appearances on Pitching Ninja GIFs, which, you know, is not really a measure of success, but it does show that it can be a nasty pitch when it's on. Well, it is getting the results to match the nastiness of the GIFs, so it's really encouraging for Houck's future prospects and current prospects. If there will still be a blow up every now and then, the splitter isn't perfect, the sinker is not the best, but when he's on, he's still capable of some fantastic starts. You know, we call this type of pitcher a cherry bomb in the pitcher list world, but I think he could be a pretty high quality cherry bomb when this year is all said and done.
I mean, we all know that I was an early adopter of Houck. That was the first article I wrote for Pitcher List. So, I do like Houck, and I'm rooting for him in that regard. But yes, the blow-ups are something that I am not particularly fond of, and which made me a bit gun-shy with him in terms of drafting him this year. But, all right.
I had some Houck fatigue myself.
Yeah.
All right, Jordan, does the Yankees bullpen make you as mad as it makes me mad?
Wandy Peralta gave up 2 runs today, and I'm so upset about it.
Is that a yes? I think that's a yes.
I think we're both on the same page in terms of just like being kind of done trying to figure it out.
I think I'm reaching the point, and this is as a big fan of Ran Marinaccio, I just call them Ran, like I'm from the Jersey Shore. Ronnie, I think Michael King is the one guy that I still trust the most and I want to roster the most, but technically he is out of our range, so we can no longer talk about Michael King. So can we start calling him like Michael King?
Like
a heavy Michael Caine-esque accent?
Michael Caine.
I would like to do that. But anyway, we can't because he's over 20%, so we cannot do this bit that I just came up with, which makes me sad.
RIP Michael King bit 2023.
3:30 a.m. bits are the best bits.
Oh, my God. All right, let's go to the Tampa Bay Rays. You got Jose Siri and Luke Raley here. Again, Luke Raley, someone that I was very sad about. Like, the average, not great, but the power is real. Like, he hits the ball very, very hard. He hit like 2 taters the week after I released him from my TGFBI team.
Yeah, stop me if you've heard this one before. The Rays have some really talented players that they don't play often enough for fantasy managers. Jose Siri, since coming off the IL, has 74 plate appearances. And in those 74 plate appearances, has 6 home runs and 3 steals, along with 24 runs in RBI. Runs plus RBI. If he played every day, he would be like, yeah, and he kept up this production, which is obviously not a guarantee, he would be like must roster in every league. But as it stands right now, he is sitting too much to trust. I'm actually shocked that Luke Raley is rostered in only 4% of leagues. Like, he's got 10 home runs. He's got to be the only 10 home run guy rostered in less than 10% of leagues.
I would fact check that, but I'm too lazy.
Yeah, I'm too lazy also, so just pretend that's true, folks.
Nailed it.
He's played 4 in a row, but before that had sat in 5 out of 9 games. He is occasionally playing against his weak side. I can't make any sense of it anymore. Maybe the recent 4 in a row is the start of a trend, but maybe he'll sit 3 games in a row now. Who knows? Ray's gonna Ray.
And then go to the Toronto Blue Jays and talk about Brandon Belt.
Justin, make sure you yell at Jordan because Jordan just hit that double T.
Did I really? Oh my God.
Sure did.
The Toronto Blue Jays.
Toronto. Brandon Belt.
The Toronto Blue Jays.
Brandon Belt, an in the deep favorite, has only sat twice since May 6th, and in that time frame, a solid 20 days, has put up a casual 207 WRC plus. Jordan, can you tell me, is that good? A 207 WRC plus?
I would venture a guess and say that yes, that is good.
That is good.
It is good.
But you don't really get credit in fantasy for WRC plus, and Belt has only hit 2 home runs in that time frame and is not stealing a base maybe ever again. So I'm not adding Belt yet until he shows some of his old power, because this batting average is just not going to hold up. It's supported by a sky-high, unsustainable WRC+. But because I respect and love Brandon Belt so much, I am keeping a really close eye on this, because I want to see him succeed again.
Love it. All right, let's go to the AL Central. Let's start with Cleveland and Aaron Civale.
Yes, I really hope no one in my TGFBI league listens to us, because Aaron Civale is going to be back from the IL soon, and I think you should absolutely be jumping to snag him now before he has the chance to be healthy and throw any major league innings again and remind people that he is good. That's it. He's good.
He's good. That's it. Let's go to the Detroit Tigers. Michael Lorenzen, he gave up 3 home runs in his last start against the Royals in Kauffman Stadium. I don't get it. That's wild. I'm not really expecting that again, and he does get the White Sox 2 games in a row, or 2 starts in a row, I should say, which bodes well as a matchup for a competent right-handed pitcher like Lorenzen. The White Sox are like 26th or something along those lines against right-handed pitchers in terms of team WRC plus this year, so I think that both those starts will be favorable ones for Lorenzen, and again, 4% rostered between ESPN and Yahoo leagues seems like a pretty good value, considering he had, like, what was it, 4 straight very, very good starts where he gave up 1 run or less in his previous 4 starts. Just very, very good. So yeah, I'm in on Lorenzen as a streamer against the White Sox. Schwebzy, what about Alex Fajardo?
Another strong streamer, I think. I mentioned him last week as a boring Toby that might get you good ratios, and I think my exact words were, why not, last week. But then he went out and struck out 10 White Sox players today, cementing his spot as someone that warrants watching or adding. But his next start is against the Rangers, which is the hardest of passes for me. And it does not get much better after that, as he will likely see the Phillies after the Rangers. That is not a two-step that I want my iffy pitchers throwing against. So, if Fajardo is out there on your waiver wire, just let someone else add him right now.
Love it. And what about Spencer Torkelson?
Actually, another player in the Beatty mold who has gotten pretty unlucky so far this year. He is looking better and better, and it feels like he's on the cusp of a breakout. We never want to see a young player fail, so we're pulling for Torque. It's fun when Torque is doing well, because we get to make up stupid names for his home runs, like Torque Jorks. Stash. You heard me.
I just can't believe what you said.
If you have the space to add Torkelson, I would do it.
I hate it so much. All right, let's go to Kansas City. Talk about them real quick. Michael Garcia.
Yeah, he's another one kind of like Steer, who is performing as advertised so far in his career. He's not the most exciting player, but he could give you some unexciting glue guy production. He's only sat in 3 games since the start of May, so the Royals are giving him every opportunity to succeed. And so far, he has done just that. We will have to see if Nicky Lopez's return to health changes anything. Michael Garcia kind of gives me Josh Rojas vibes.
Josh Rojas?
Yeah.
That makes sense. I can see that. I like that comp. That's a good comp.
Maybe a little less OBP.
OBP? Yeah, you know me. All right, let's go to, what about Michael Massey?
In May, he has a 137 WRC plus, which I will not ask Jordan. I will just tell you guys that is good. I think I might be on board with this now. I was notably not on the Michael Massey train earlier in the off season and early this season, but he's coming around and he legitimately looks kind of good now.
Well, it was like him and Steer were both the type where they struggled a bit to start the season and then have kind of come into a groove here in May, I feel like.
Yeah, I think I was looking for some kind of standout tool from both of them, and yeah, it turns out they're just kind of both professional, cromulent, okay hitters, and that'll play if you're getting everyday plate appearances.
Folks, the cromulent counter is at, I believe, 3 for the episode. For those keeping
track, we should do like a Pee-wee's Funhouse. Every time I say cromulent,
love it. Well, ever word of the day. I like that. Okay, speaking
of the word of the day is always cromulent.
Speaking of people that make you go, I'm not gonna yell again. Actually, I was going to, and then I didn't commit to it. Carlos Hernandez. Something that probably makes you feel like that on the inside occasionally.
I wanted Carlos Hernandez to be a good starter so badly last year.
Yes, you did.
And I'm pretty sure I had done deep dives on him. I probably made him a focus at the offseason.
Yes.
But then he had to go and get completely obliterated in the 2021 season and make me really sad in the process. Well, Carlos Hernandez is back, and now he's a reliever. And now his fastball averages 99 miles per hour. Averages. So he might just be one of those pitchers that couldn't hack it as a starting pitcher and turns into an ace reliever. I've already added him in a few places as a reliever because A, I'm a sucker, and B, he just looks straight up incredible. His slider is averaging 89, and it's getting better results than it ever has before. And he's kind of ditched his sinker to focus on a four-seamer. And like I said, he's throwing that four-seamer stupid hard. And similar to the sinker slider, similar to the slider, getting better results than ever before.
Love it. I did write down Zach Greinke's name here just because, like, the results as of late, specifically recently, have been pretty solid. Like, 5-plus innings, no more than 3 earned runs allowed in his last 5 starts.
I wrote Zach Greinke down just because I like to think about Zach Greinke sometimes.
I don't know how to handle this because he's been decent. Like, I think about the start, what was it, like 5 or 6 starts ago or something like that? He threw 5 innings, he had 44 pitches, and then he got pulled. Just after 44 pitches. Five shutout innings, no less.
Zach Greinke is like Patrick Corbin, except I don't hate myself when I add him.
Yes. I was trying to come up with something more clever, but basically, yes, that's how I feel as well. Let's go to the Minnesota Twins, last team here for the AL Central. Louis Varland, covered as Shrubsy's deep dive last week? Was that just last week?
I think it was 2 weeks ago.
Was it really? Who'd you cover last week then?
Oh, I don't know.
Am I crazy? No, you covered him last week. That was last
week's
episode.
You're right. Everything blends together. That's true. Time has no meaning.
It all bleeds together. Yeah, time is a flat circle, so on and so forth. Rust Cole. But yes, Varland, the velo needs to be there, but I know, like, if you really want to hear, like, the full breakdown, you can pretty much just go back and listen to last week's episode, listen to Schwebzy cover Varland. He's got kind of a rough stretch of starts coming up. I feel like he faces Toronto. See, I didn't do it that time. And, oh gosh, there's 2 other really good quality offenses that he's lined up to face at his next 2 starts.
Houston,
there we go. That was the other one I was thinking of. Not great. Kind of nervous about those.
And he is matched up against Gaussman and Hunter Brown, which kind of hurts the win
pass.
Potential there.
Pass. No, thank you. I'm out on those. But yes, Varland, upside is there. Just wait it out a little bit. Willie Castro, he's getting enough plate appearances to matter, and he's hitting .283 since the start of May. The batting average, obviously, always encouraging, helpful in this current environment in terms of hitters. Average is hard to come by.
You know, I always think it's funny where I draw my line for, like, allowing myself to be fooled again and not. And for some reason, Willie falls on the side of the line where I'm like, I'm not getting fooled by Willie Castro again. I couldn't tell you why, folks, but I'm not adding him anywhere.
Okay, what about Kyle Farmer? Because now, with Correa being out, he's going to be playing at shortstop, I think, every day.
I have, like, nightmares of a time in, I want to say, 2021, where, like, someone almost took past me in a roto league for first place, like, just on the strength of, like, a bunch of 40-year-old pitchers like Adam Wainwright and, like, Kyle Farmer just going insane. And that's just a lot of words to say that I don't like Kyle Farmer, but I think he's fine and is worth a roster spot in like 15 teamers. And I think he's good for that type of format. He's not just worth rostering.
Love it. All right. Joey Gallo on here too. We wanted to touch on just the very standard classic big boy hit ball hard, make ball go far. Remains true. It would be really, really cool if his average was an absolute dog water.
Yeah. Would be nice. That's not who he is.
And then the last one for the Twins, Alex Kirilloff. Again, strong side platoon bat. He's going to be hitting near the top of the lineup when he is in there. Just be conscious of if they're going to be facing a heavy stretch of left-handed pitchers. Be prepared that he's only going to get a couple starts that week, maybe, and just sit him. But yeah, all right, let's go to the AL West and start with the Angels. Shubs, you wrote down Mickey Moniak.
Well, one quick thing about the Twins before we move on
sure,
from them.
Yeah.
Edward Julian is also an interesting player there, but the Twins are very aggressively platooning both Kirilloff and Julian to the point that they will start one of those players, and if a lefty comes in like the third inning, they'll take that player out in the third inning. I don't really agree with that treatment of those players, but that's what they're doing. So be especially mindful of the other team's pitchers when you're using Twins right now. So moving on to the AL West and Mickey Moniak. Moniak has already set a new career high for max exit velo by almost 2.5 miles per hour, which is pretty significant. I want to see better plate discipline before I start singing his praises, but the former number one overall pick is kind of demanding the fantasy world's attention right now. He's doing some really loud things on the stat sheet, and I'd be adding him just to see if he can maintain this. Then, kind of the opposite, a star prospect who started slowly this year, Zach Neto. I mentioned last week he's trending up, and that hasn't really changed. His hard hit rate continues to rise, and honestly, it's just so impressive that he's so fresh out of college and doing what he's doing, and you can see him like learning in real time and becoming a more effective major leaguer in real time. I have him in my AL only league, and I'm kind of enjoying watching him develop. And then lastly for the Angels, there's Jamie Barea, who had a really good start in his first start of the year, but frankly, I'm not super interested. I actually want to see who his next start is against before I completely write him off. He gets the White Sox next. Almost every pitcher with a pulse is an auto start against the White Sox, so I think I would run him out there for that start if you need a stream.
Also, for what it's worth, it is Jaime.
Jaime, gotcha.
But yes, I would agree with that, though. Obviously, like facing the White Sox for right-handed pitchers in particular looks pretty solid right now, so I would be happy to do that as well. What about Oakland and J.P. Sears?
Yeah, this is the rare, barely rostered player who actually seems to have an effective fastball. I'm kind of interested in him for that reason alone. But he's actually got at least a 25% whiff rate on all four of his pitches, or at least he did before today, because he just came off of a weirdly effective start today, where he only got 3 whiffs against the Mariners and still kind of had a successful start. Baseball is dumb. That home ballpark, though, is also dumb, but it's fantastic for pitchers. And I've added Sears in a couple of leagues because he's intriguing. He looks like he could be an effective pitcher this year. And speaking of Seattle, they have their own interesting development in Jose Caballero, who I don't think he was on anybody's radar before a few weeks ago. I know I butchered that pronunciation, but he is demanding that we pay attention to him because he's just been incredible. And his peripherals actually back up his strong numbers so far. The realist in me doubts that he can keep this up. And everything in me says that he will not hit 10 home runs this year, even if he gets full-time plate appearances. But I think he will have to continue to run like crazy to have any sort of fantasy value. But, I mean, that's all about intent, and he's had the intent so far.
All right, let's go to, I believe, the last team, Texas Rangers, and Leody Taveras, Schwebs.
Yeah, I've definitely written Taveras off in a previous episode by saying that his hot streaks come and go, but at this point, his hot streak has now lasted long enough that I have to pay attention to it. So I'm sure, like, starting tomorrow, he'll fall off a cliff because now I've said that you should add him. But he's got a career-low strikeout rate by almost 5% and a career-high hard hit rate to match. That tells me that if he can keep doing what he's doing, he might actually be able to hit for a decent enough average to pile up some steals and get you some counting stats in that really dope Rangers offense. Elite defense is going to keep him in that lineup, so, you know, all he really has to do is keep putting the bat on the ball to have some fantasy impact.
Absolutely. Awesome. All right. I think that's going to be it for this week's episode of In the Deep. Thank you all so much for joining us once again. We appreciate it. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, we do have a shared podcast account that's going to be at In the Deep PL. And then you also have individual Twitter accounts that you can follow us at. It's going to be at Schwebsy for Schwebsy. That's S-H-W-E-B-S-I. And then Bunt Singles for myself. And we'll be back next week with another episode. Schwebsy, send them out.
Bye, friends.